sacrament of the altar, the Lord meets us, men and women created in God's image and likeness, and becomes our companion along the way. In this sacrament, the Lord truly becomes food for us to satisfy our hunger for truth and freedom, since only the truth can make us free. Christ becomes for us the food of truth.
You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. These words of St. Augustine are as true today as when they were written more than 1,000 years ago. That is why it was entirely appropriate that Pope Benedict's first apostolic exhortation, Sacramentum Caritatis, should have dealt with the Eucharist. It is supremely in the Eucharist that the Lord is present to us on our journey through life. Father Richard Taylor teaches New Testament studies and biblical foundations of theology at the Pontifical Beda College and the Angelicum University in Rome. He describes the way in which the exhortation is ever old, yet also ever new.
Those of us who are brought up in the old tradition would recognize a lot of it. He wants a very, very committed devotion in a renewed life of prayer. He wants more holy hours, more time spent in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And he's also encouraging people to go to Mass and to go to Mass with this sense of the people of God collectively together offering the sacramental sacrifice to the Heavenly Father. So it's as you say, very comprehensive, but also very, very practical in what one would expect, what things people might do.
In a way, it's not saying anything new because of that, but it's very fresh in the way it's written.
Yes, one of the very happy aspects of it is that everything is positive and there are no threats, there are no complaints, there are no penalties. In other words, when you're reading this, you're being encouraged to do what is good and what you've always been doing. But the Pope is not wagging the finger at people who haven't been doing this. He's only encouraging people who are doing well to keep on doing it better. In other words, it is an exercise in love, not an exercise in negative condemnations.
Yes, because one of the things that struck me, for instance, when I was reading it, was in the section on marriage, where he talks about the societies in which there is polygamy. He doesn't say polygamy is wrong, he doesn't say it's right, but he just says, you know, that things should be ordered towards what is the traditional stance of the Church.
That's the whole line he follows. In other words, he's offering the best, and then the best should have its own effect because people will experience it, then they will love it, and then they will go on subscribing to it. And one of the aspects, of course, that he underlines massively is the idea of beauty. The celebration should be beautiful. And if the celebration is beautiful, then people will be drawn to the mystery through the medium of beauty. So God is love, and we love what is beautiful. So therefore, when we love what is beautiful, therefore we will love God. So there's a whole accent there to encourage people to celebrate not just with dignity, but with the sort of reverence one has in the presence of the beautiful. And he also offers a very nice example, which I think he has given himself. Because you remember when he was celebrating the Mass for the funeral of Pope John Paul II, most people had never really seen Cardinal Ratzinger as a priest before. Now they saw him celebrating Mass. They heard him preaching. And many people told me he was total reverence and total truth, and that it was complete beauty, and he was self-effacing. So what he was asking and is asking is from priests that they avoid any form of self-preferment or self-promotion or drawing attention to themselves, but rather like a musician, listen to the music. Look at the beauty that is there, but don't intrude your presence between the excellence that is and the excellence you want people to see. So it's rather a mediating role, which is greatly accentuated in the invitation that he is giving to those who celebrate the Mass.
Because he's making the Eucharist the source, the summit, the pinnacle, the total object of everything that we do.
He is, because the Eucharist, of course, is that point, that intersection between that unseen world of God and the real, tangible, experiential world in which we live. And therefore, if one takes the sacraments in the Catholic tradition, the sacraments are the means by which one becomes absolutely, almost experientially in touch with the transcendental, with the supernatural. So it's once this aspect of the mystery all the time. It's the presence of the unseen world being mediated through the sacramental symbols that are in the seen world. So therefore, to live like that is to live in the presence of Christ, you see, like people who were with Christ in his days in Palestine. They wouldn't have seen heaven. They would have seen him, and see him was to see heaven. So we could see the idea of how the notion of the incarnation is at the heart of this understanding of the Eucharist.
And with his emphasis on beauty, beauty is something that has a tremendous cultural expression. So he's not confined the Eucharist to what is done in the Vatican or what is done within Rome. He has given the possibility of people in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, in the Americas, whatever, using what is beautiful in their cultural understanding and tradition to make the Eucharist more meaningful to their own people.
That's right. Because you remember when he celebrated his own birthday, he made a speech afterwards thanking the Stuttgart players for the excellence of the concert they had given him. And then he presented music as an example of beauty, which is universal. So that wherever you've got universal beauty, you have the unification of humanity. So beauty is actually overcoming the alienations that set people off from people. So wherever beauty then is articulated, seen and cultivated in the sacraments, in obviously the Mass, then it has this wonderful effect of uniting people in what they do and what they hope for. So it's one of the key categories that the Pope is calling upon to put people in touch with the transcendent, and in doing so, to put them in touch with each other.
Because as well, he has a great love for symbols, and just in the chasubles that he wears, you can see symbols. There's one, for instance, it's a gold-coloured chasuble, satin, and it has the pilgrim's shell as its decoration. There's another one, it's white with little gold bees all over, and it brings home the sweetness of the message. A symbol as well is so much involved in this document and in the liturgy. And
he draws attention to one particular symbol which is most interesting. It's the symbol of the sign of peace. And in discussing that, he, again, does not in any sense fulminate against the overindulgence that has sometimes been seen when the kiss of peace seems to dominate the Eucharistic service at a given moment. What he does do is he encourages it, of course, but then he says that since it's very important, perhaps one should consider putting it somewhere else in the context of the Mass. And so he's going to ask the dicasteries in here to study the best place in which the kiss of peace might be exchanged between the faithful. So perhaps at the beginning of Mass, so that people would effectively come together, be reconciled, and find a way of expressing their oneness even before they begin to celebrate the Mass. So the symbol of peace expressed in some gesture of handshake or a kiss, obviously he's getting the maximum meaning out of that and asking for people to appreciate its importance.